I think Mike called me probably in like March that year, maybe early 2018, and said, you know, there's project. I can't tell you what it is, but just kind of the way he was talking about it, I was like, oh my God, he's talking about Half-Life. And I was driving down the interstate in Minneapolis, and I just wanted to pull over and like scream.
Emily Reese is the host of the VGM podcast, Level with Emily Reese. Well, obviously. She conducts some of the finest interviews you'll ever hear. And that's what led to a series with the sound team from Valve featuring their VR game, Half-Life Alyx. Now, clearly, I have a lot of questions, and we dig into them all. But first, Emily catches us up to speed on her podcasting career. I'm Stephen Kelly, and thanks for joining us for an evening at the Roost.
In 2011, cannot believe it's been 10 years ago now, my friend Sam Keenan and I started a show called Top Score. And we at the time both worked at Minnesota Public Radio here in the Twin Cities. Actually, it's in St. Paul. I live across the river in Minneapolis. But we were there. We did the show there for about 4 years. It was a podcast, and then it was like a really brief radio show. It kind of had a few different transitions at its time at Minnesota Public Radio. And then we both left the company at different times and then rekindled the podcast as Level with Emily Reese. And that's been going on since, I would say, I think we started episodes in 2015, like late 2015, but we didn't name it Level until sometime in early 2016.
So
that's the timeline there. And, you know, just been doing that just ever since. I try and do it weekly, but I'm not always very good at that. It's just gets a little hectic with work and other responsibilities, but I love it so much, and just feel so lucky to have built the relationships that we've built and met the people we've met and get to hear the music we get to hear. So it's pretty awesome. I mean, on Level, we focus mostly on composers of video game music, but with and interviews with them, of course. And but we also do occasionally step outside those boundaries into other audio areas of games. So that's just fun.
I feel a deep kinship with all of your shows because I feel like both your show or your shows and ours have kind of constantly reinvented themselves and changed their format.
and
then you compare that to like the Super Mercado Brothers podcast. I don't know if you've listened to their show before, but they are the most like consistent quality show that you will ever find. Like their format has stayed strong for years upon years.
It's amazing. They definitely found exactly what they wanted to do and have been able to execute it really beautifully. I love those guys. They're amazing and they're wonderful musicians. And for us it was a little tricky at first when we left Minnesota Public Radio, just because of, you know, intellectual property rights and things like that. We had to be a little careful. I think we would have had to be a lot more careful if we had made a ton of money.
Right.
And so we just wanted to be careful and respectful. So that kind of forced, I don't want to say forced us into changes, because I think we were really wanting to do more than what we really could at NPR, because, and I mean, I'm so grateful for it, but when I was there, I was working for the classical department. And so we again had to be kind of careful with the content in terms of artists that we would talk to or composers and the kind of music we were going to play, because the feature was played on the classical radio station.
Yeah.
And it was syndicated on hundreds of classical radio stations across the country. So, you know, we couldn't just put whoever we wanted on there and expect the audience to respond positively in those cases. So that kind of restricted us a little. And so it was nice to open our format up and just be able to welcome any type, any genre, and also any type of audio, whether it's voiceover actors or audio directors or composers.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you were trying to be the bridge between two different audiences in kind of a weird way. Which I think was really valuable, because I think that was a relationship that went both ways. You had people who were introduced to video game music, and then also people who discovered it through video game music who were introduced a little more to classical music and that whole world.
Yeah, I mean, that's always my goal. I mean, I first and foremost am a classically trained musician and with a deep love and obsession and passion for classical music. And so I want everybody to love it. And if I see a bridge to that through other beautiful, wonderful, perfectly composed music, then I'll grab that any day and be like, hey, if you like this, check out this, you know?
Yep.
And I mean, because there's so much great music that just really doesn't get heard very often and people don't have context for it. So it might seem intimidating. And and I mean, I loved the idea of welcoming more people into that community, the classical music community, through their love of, you know, just good music, right? Just good instrumental music.
Were there any episodes back in the Top Score Radio days that people especially responded to?
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. Now you're asking me to dig here. Yeah, I mean, I think people really loved, I think old school, so to speak, old school listeners, old school bosses, things along those lines, really loved the stuff that really was quite classical in its construction.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
For instance, I remember BioShock Infinite came out when I was working there. Music by Gary Scheiman. And I mean, Gary just is a really brilliant mind anyway, and has had a lot of really intense classical training. So he's a student of the art and, you know, put a lot of research and development into that sound and making it sound like America in whatever it was, 1914 or 12, I can't remember now.
Mm-hmm.
That was really fun to talk about and kind of show, because radio still was kind of being dragged in a chokehold into the digital age. I mean, it was just like the older generations in radio had a really difficult time understanding how radio could fit into the digital age. And, you know, those younger in the industry were looking to things like podcasts and stuff. And it was not an easy thing to convince that those would be relevant and important. And so having games like BioShock Infinite was really helpful to be able to say, look at this giant AAA game that's going to make hundreds of millions of dollars, and listen to how much time and care they put into this music to make it authentic, and listen to how great the result is. And we can learn all these cool things from it. And it also happens to sound a little bit like Charles Ives and a little bit like, you know, so-and-so. And, you know, I mean, it's just gives us an example to talk about Stephen Foster. And yeah, that stuff is really valuable to, I don't want to say older generations, because I have colleagues that are my age. I'm 44, so I'm on this really weird bubble of technology and not technology. And so I have friends who are just like completely can't even log into their, you know, AOL email still, right? So it's like, it's just weird to be kind of in this weird little hump of in between land. And, you know, it's a lot of people just don't have a connection to video games and don't understand how artistic the world can be. And it can be all those other things they don't like too, but it's also all these awesome things with great music and art and stories and the things we love.
Yeah, like so much of it is what you grew up in and where your perspective is right now. And depending on where that is, you could see a medium like video game music in a completely different light. There are people whose entire hobby is classic game music, like the original, you know, chiptune and authentic tracking and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then other people who are like, wait, what are you talking about? When you say the words video game music, I think Lena Raine, Austin Wintory, like the new, newer kind of the indie games and like sort of that whole scene. And it's become a broad enough topic that one word doesn't even begin to contain it.
Well, yeah, and that's because it's been a decade now since games like that came out in the first place, like Bastion and Braid and all of those games from way early in those kind of them opening up the the world to indie gamers and developers. I mean, that's been around for 10 years now,
mm-hmm.
or more, really. And so it's just like, it's no wonder that there are people who really aren't thinking of chiptunes when they think of video game music. And I'll be honest, I say this in pretty much every interview. You may recall, I didn't game when I was a kid, so sure. I didn't grow up with it either. I mean, I did, more so than most kids nowadays, but I still didn't have an NES, and I didn't play Sega when I was a kid. I mean, I maybe once a year or somebody over at somebody's house, but
right. Yeah,
you know, so my experience with it is different as well.
And yeah.
I mean, that's music in a nutshell, right? Like classical music in itself, it spans hundreds of years, you know, and so video game music also just has this huge broad net that it's cast.
Yeah. And I mean, like I could have grown up listening to SNES music, like exclusively. I'm the right age for that. But
yeah.
I had, let's say, very cautious parents who were not sure about this video game thing. And it yeah. took until the Nintendo 64 era for us to convince our parents to take that dark plunge into the depths. So we actually had to buy retro consoles like from, you know, eBay or whatever to go back and experience them. So my nostalgic video game memories are like the kind of that Dreamcast GameCube era, you know,
sure.
your Wind Wakers and your Sonic Adventures and all of that. So that has absolutely shaped the way I see video game music, to the point where mm-hmm. I'm fairly, you know, well-versed and love talking about the older titles. But, you know, if I was to get into a room with my contemporary fellow podcasters, I would be destroyed on trivia night, right?
Like, oh, yeah, I would too, for sure. Still to this day. And I've had 10 years that I could go back and listen to it and study it. But mm-hmm. but I kind of haven't because, you know, as we've established, I have other musical jobs that require listening time from me. But
yeah.
it's like, it's an interesting thing. I'm like, you know what? There are plenty of people in the world who are covering that way better than I could.
Right,
so
yeah.
You guys just keep going, and every once in a while a chiptunes OST comes out and falls in my lap and I'm like, yes, this is amazing. Yep. Let's do it. You
it
know
just hits perfect. Yeah, I know what you mean. And you know, the world I've noticed has a lot of things in it, and
there's a few,
you know, sometimes I drop these little wisdom bombs in it.
Yeah.
It has a lot of things in it, and the absolute breadth of things that you could learn about is intimidating enough, but then the absolute depth that each one of them contains is mind-boggling. So you, at some point, you have to pick your battles. Like, if I learn more about game design, I'm spending less time listening to game music and spending less time learning how to play the melodica, right?
Like, yep.
it all is a balancing act. It's a very fun uh-huh. balancing act, but
yes, yes indeed.
Yeah, you kind of have to come to terms and accept the fact that you can't do everything.
Exactly.
Let alone be the best at anything. So. So let's talk about Level with Emily Reese today. What kinds of people are you like reaching out to? What's your podcast flow?
It's always surprised me how it kind of comes in spurts. Like, I'll schedule a bunch of interviews and have a bunch of interviews, and then I'm like, okay, I'm good for a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I edit and release as I can. So that's pretty much how that goes. I no longer even attempt to chase release dates, mm-hmm. really.
Yep.
I've got relationships with some agents who will prompt me and be like, hey, so-and-so has a game coming out here. Do you want to talk with them again? Usually it's someone I've talked to before.
Sure.
And, you know, do you want to talk with them again? Yeah, absolutely. But I pretty much stay away from making any kind of promises as to when things will come out.
Yeah, yeah. We're kind of in the same boat. We ostensibly have an every other week, or I guess bi-weekly schedule. But yeah, pick your battles.
Yeah, exactly. It's been a good year. I was going to say, you know, last year was good for the podcast in terms of content and guests and the like. It was got a little slow over the summer. I live in Minneapolis, very close to the Third Precinct, which burned down after George Floyd was killed in police custody.
Got
a little hectic here for a while. And I think everyone just kind of took a step back. We had to have a friend live with us who lived even closer to the action than we did. Mm-hmm. And so she stayed with us for that week. And as everything was on fire around us, and
that
kind of slowed me down. I won't lie. And I'm absolutely not in any way trying to, use that. I don't want that to sound like I'm using it as an excuse, but I will just speak to you honestly that was a really difficult and traumatic experience for everyone around here. And anyone who goes through anything like that, it's scary. And I think a lot of us just kind of stepped back and were like, okay, well, at least I'm not scared of COVID anymore.
Right.
That took that fear away.
It's like when your leg itches and your arm falls off.
Exactly. it was a really good year, and I met some really cool people doing really amazing things last year, like Rob Kovacs, who is a pianist, and he's another classically trained musician who's tremendously technically gifted. He goes by the name 88-Bit, and he's absolutely fantastic. His arrangements are tremendously difficult, and he's just so good that he plays them well and makes these really great videos, and it was super cool to meet him. And
wow, that's awesome.
I had some old guests that I've had many times, like Gary Scheiman. He did a game with Mikolaj Strawinski, who did the music for The Witcher.
Really? What project was that?
That was a game called Metamorphosis, which is based off the Kafka novel. And it was just a little 3D platformer, and about, you know, you wake up as a bug, which is what happens in the book. And so they wrote this really cool, you know, early 1900s, you know, expressionist music kind of soundtrack, which was very cool. And I don't know. It was a good one. So we're and as I mentioned to you before we hit record, we've been working on a project with Valve for a while now on the music and audio from Half-Life Alyx, and that's been great fun, and we'll be getting interviews out at some point, hopefully someday, from that.
I assume you can't talk about too much of those details.
Oh, no, sure. I can talk about whatever I want. I mean, the game's out. It's just a matter of the soundtrack isn't quite finished yet. And the composer, Mike Moraski, who, of course, did the Left 4 Dead games and Portal 2 and Team Fortress and whatever else Mike has worked on at Valve, is insane. And Mike is so brilliant, and you know, when you listen through the music from Half-Life Alyx that's finished thus far, I mean, I just can't even put into words how good it is, and how thoughtful Mike is about the scales he uses and the way he's using instruments in the, it's just mind-boggling how good it is. So I can't wait to do final interviews with Mike and dig into that stuff and get it shared. But yeah, we interviewed them each year. So we went out there in 2018, we interviewed them in 2019, and mm-hmm. we were supposed to go out last year, but of course COVID. So, so we just did a series of Skype interviews or whatever was working at the time with them, because they were all sent home, of course, too. So
when did you enter this project? Like, at what level?
We went in the summer of 2018, and I think Mike called me probably in like March that year, maybe early 2018, and said, you know, there's project, I can't tell you what it is, and but just kind of the way he was talking about it, I was like, oh my God, he's talking about Half-Life. And I was driving down the interstate in Minneapolis, and I just wanted to pull over and like scream.
But hyperventilate a little bit.
Yeah. But essentially, we met the whole audio team. And pardon me, concurrently with the Half-Life Alyx launch, or shortly before the game was released, they also released their new headset, the new Index headset.
Right. Yeah.
With a new audio system. And the inventor of the audio system, she's also a member of the audio team, Emily Ridgway. Speaking mm-hmm. of BioShock, she was the audio director on the first BioShock and on Destroy All Humans, which is how Gary was hired.
Yeah.
Gary Scheinman.
I see.
So that's fun, little side note. But Emily Ridgway invented this new system of headphones for the Index VR headset.
Uh-huh.
And so we talked in quite in depth about that process as well. And we talked quite in depth with one of the inventors of Steam Audio, Lakulish. I think Lakulish's last name is Antani, and I'm apologize if I get that wrong. But Lakulish and his business partner had out in, I think they went to school at maybe like Raleigh-Durham or something, UNC maybe, something like that. Mm-hmm. And they were audio engineers and invented a real-time like reverb system for games, so that, you know, when your character walks around a room and, you know, reverb is how we're getting a sense for distance mm-hmm. and things like that. So it's I can't say it as succinctly as Lakulish can explain, but it's basically the system for implementing how objects sound in a game. Anything from walls to, you know, a can kicking down the road to birds off in the distance to,
And anyone who has done any sort of Foley or audio work for films or any medium like that, reverb is a powerful tool.
It's essential. I mean,
it's like it shapes the mood of the whole scene, and in a game gives you vital information.
Yeah. And I mean, when you think about those things that are like the quietest rooms in the world, we have one here in Minneapolis where it's a room with like literally zero reverb. You walk mm-hmm. into the room and there's all the sounds are absorbed. And so that reverb is tremendously important for us to give us a sense of all kinds of things. And in games, it's just a way to enhance realism. So So Lakulish and his friend, his business partner, were purchased by Valve, and that got turned into Steam Audio, which, of course, being a Valve cool product, anyone can use for free mm-hmm. in their game if they want. So it's amazing. So those are the things we talked about. We talked about the headset that came out. We talked about Steam Audio. And then we talked with two of the other audio designers, Dave Fiza and Roland Shaw. And Dave does like all the weapons and mm-hmm. all the ambience. He's very much into creating ambience that sounds real and lifelike. And he also developed some really cool programming tools. And then Roland was pretty much in charge of all the creatures and also all the objects. So if you pick up a box of matches and it shakes and you can hear the matches shake, that's Roland making that happen.
Awesome.
So, yeah. So, and there were just thousands of sounds that Roland made for that game. And it's just, they're amazing people. And when you talk to them, you understand why they're at Valve, because they're very much, they're polymaths. They can master new skills quickly. They can invent new solutions. that benefit teams of people. I mean, they're really amazing. I cannot speak highly enough about the people that we met there. I mean, they're just amazing people. And you would be like, oh man, I need this list of things from you. Send it off and cross your fingers. And within an hour, they'd send it back. Like all of them, they're just like that. They're just, they're professionals, you know?
That's the part that really got me.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Now, I mean, yeah, I guess it's a reason that they were the chosen to work on the next Half-Life game, right? Like that's...
Well, and the thing about Valve, though, it's not, you're not chosen. You just, you choose your path at Valve. So, you know, if you want to work at Valve, all you got to do is go convince a bunch of people that you should work at Valve.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, it's a very, very different business model than, well, any other place I've ever even heard of. And, you know, you make your own way. And so if you want to work on Half-Life Alyx, you find a way to do it. And
that's really interesting.
Yep. And I mean, it's safe to say that some of those things fall out fairly naturally. You know, like if, for instance, Roland, one of the audio designers, if Roland is busy working on Dota or he's busy working on Counter-Strike or something, he might not have time to work on Half-Life Alyx. But so that's kind of how that works. Like Emily Ridgway, for instance, primarily works on Counter-Strike. That's her baby, she calls it. But for this project, for Half-Life Alyx, she wrote all of the Combine dialogue and got all of that recorded. And I mean, you know, it's just, they can just cross areas and they're really brilliant minded people that do really good work. I mean,
honestly, what you're describing kind of sounds like a small team, a small business, a small like indie developer, for an enormous company. Like that is pretty special.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a unique place. And there are, I believe, probably classes taught about the business model of that institution. It's an amazing place. And we just felt really lucky to be able to work with them. And hopefully we'll be able to share stuff with you at some point in the future from that. So, yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my last question about that whole deal, like what was it? Did you get to like go to like Valve HQ? Is that where?
Yeah, we did.
Cool.
And I mean, you know, I think buildings like that are kind of what you could dream and better. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's like a giant cafeteria with like super healthy choices, and you can kind of more or less eat sort of whenever you want. And each floor has little snacks and there's all these, you know, great creative spaces, and there's a full gym with a personal trainer that you can just work out in the middle of your work day and have your, you know, so, I mean, it's pretty great. And I've been in a handful of places like that, and they're always pretty amazing to just walk in and be like, wow, this would be cool to work here.
Yeah.
Of course, nobody's working there right now.
That's
but,
the sad thing. All those elaborate head crab statues are gathering dust, I assume.
Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, it was a pretty impressive spot. And I think that they've only been in that, well, probably now for maybe 5 or 6 years. But at the time, they'd only been in that building for a couple years. So it was still a little new to them too, you know? So
that must have made it just tragic to have to bounce for so long.
I'm sure, yeah.
Have you seen any of the NoClip documentaries?
Yeah, I have.
Okay, because this is giving me NoClip vibes in two ways. One, because I kind of feel like you are fulfilling a NoClip role for the audio sphere of video games, which is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I have a tremendous amount of respect for documentarians. I don't really feel like I have skills that very well for that. I mean, basically, when we release what we're going to release, it'll be interviews, series of interviews. And, you know, with Mike, the composer for Half-Life Alyx, it'll be a series of, it will be several interviews. People are so good at taking and telling a story from years worth of audio. And I feel a little less capable than a lot of those folks are.
But I mean, it's tough competition.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're professionals in that way. And yeah, so it'll still be, I hope, really insightful and just really great information for people to just kind of know what it takes to work on a project like that and just kind of get a sense for how just brilliant these minds are that are working on games like that. So, yeah.
Well, here's something that I find so valuable about projects like this. And it's one of the main reasons that Brian and I were so excited to work on Field of View. I don't actually remember if we've ever talked about this project of ours on this podcast. So very quick recap is Field of View, The Art of Game Design is the subtitle. It's a sort of documentary style interview series that we have been working on YouTube. By the time this goes up, we'll have three videos out. And
nice.
We talk to all kinds of game designers. And each video is themed, you know, around some aspect of game design. One is on time loops. One is on the original Myst. The thing that I am very dedicated to, that I think is important and love when anyone is doing in any aspect, is preserving these conversations and these stories from designers and artists and composers and programmers from this era of video games, which is the very earliest era of video games. Like, it's still yep. Like, we talked to the creators of Myst, for example. That game came out in 1993. You know, they were up on stage for like Apple, like back in the day. Like, it was that was like a historic moment in many ways. And we are just able to reach out through the internet and ask them, what was it like?
Yep.
And you'd be surprised how undocumented these things are. You can find interviews here and there, but by and large, a lot of these really important game creators, you really have to hunt and peck to find substantial interviews and conversations with them. And just sharing that with the world in an archival sense, I think is really neat. And thinking about the project you're doing with Half-Life, game audio probably gets even less play than game design. So
yeah,
I think that's going to be important in years to come.
Yeah, I mean, it really is fascinating to try and share certain examples of game audio because of the way audio operates in games, in that it's usually constructed in a bunch of pieces that trigger at various times. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's ever created outside of the game as a standalone unit. Does that make sense? So
yes, yeah.
A monster in Half-Life might roar, but it might be triggering seven different audio files at once. And so for me to, you know, say, hey, can we get this sound on its own? They have to go back in and make it. And that's just like the soundtrack, right? That's exactly what happens with a soundtrack. I mean, that's what Mike Morasky is doing right now, is recreating how the music enacts itself in the game. So it is an interesting thing to document for that reason, because it's almost an elusive entity of itself. You know, it's like you can't really hear it on its own. It's so contextual, you know?
I mean, that even factors into distributing the music, because a film score is a film score. It's linear.
Yeah.
But for years, for example, World of Warcraft has its music has become more and more dynamic over time. And so now they'll make a sound selection of carefully edited kind of highlights from a given expansion. But, you know, you're going to have to find some way to crack into the game files if you want to hear, you know, Area B A with flutes, right?
Yeah,
you kind of have to construct
exactly.
it yourself. And it's like, there's really no getting around that, because games are just so dang complex.
Yes. Yes, they are. It's amazing.
So, I don't have a great segue for this, but speaking of traveling to interesting places across the world, back in 2019, I guess it was, we were able to go to your corner of the world. We made the pilgrimage over to Minnesota, St. Paul, all those hot spots. It was actually to go to Carl Brueggemann's wedding.
Oh,
so we got to hang out at the Mercado Brother home base and
nice.
Meet everyone from there. And it was super cool seeing the Twin Cities that I've heard so much about and actually being able to drive between them and try to figure out where the heck I was.
Yeah. It's pretty wonderful spot. I've been here now for a while, so I'm, you know, always, I kind of tend to get a little restless.
Yeah.
But I do love it here, and we are very lucky to have a lot of water and a lot of parks. And so
right.
I mean, I think it's like 98% of the metro area lives within two blocks of a park or something. It's crazy how much park space we have. And so that makes it more bearable, especially when it's cold. And like at the end of my street, there's an elementary school. And in that whole area is, you know, they have softball fields, they have basketball courts, they have a little, you know, playground for the kids. But mm-hmm. in the wintertime then, well, there's a pool in the summer. In the wintertime, there's ice rinks. There's a hockey rink. Yeah. There's just a plain skating rink. And, you know, you can just go down there and mess around. It makes a lot nicer.
that sounds absolutely lovely. I really enjoyed my time there. We got to see some of the older neighborhoods, really beautiful, overgrown with trees. And I love that whole vibe. And what constantly surprises me is it seems like everyone I know in the area knows a bunch of, like, super talented jazz musicians. And it's just like, do they just spawn there or do they find each other?
There are amazing jazz musicians here in Minneapolis. And that's pretty much a byproduct of the way jazz spread mm-hmm. back in the early 20th century and just where trains would stop and where metros were. You know, we were close to Chicago, so a lot of people would come over from Chicago. Yeah. And we're farther away from Kansas City, but still some Kansas City musicians would make it up to the cities. And yeah, we're lucky. We also have great recording studios here mm-hmm. and two Grammy Award winning tremendous orchestras. And so that draws talent too. You know what I mean? This is a very strong music and theater town for sure.
Anything else exciting that you want to bring to the table?
I would love to talk about the other podcast, if that's okay.
Yes, please do. Please do.
Yeah. So I also do a podcast called Scores and Pours.
Mm-hmm.
And right. Scores and Pours is about wine and classical music. And my friend Jill Mott, she is a sommelier, so she knows her wines and her beers and her spirits mm-hmm. better than anybody I've ever met in my whole life. And she explains those things, and I explain something about classical music. And so
That is a good pairing.
Yeah. And we both just try to have fun with it because they can be such stuffy, intimidating topics because they're like, wine is so overwhelming. It's just unreal to me. And so can classical music be. And it's just, we just try to have a really good time with it. And it's the first time I had ever worked with a co-host, and that's really fun.
Oh yeah.
Like I'd never really got to have that experience very often. And so mm-hmm. that's been super fun to work with her on that. And
yeah. See, I have a built-in co-host from childhood.
Exactly. Exactly.
I don't know what it's like to not have one.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
it
kind of seems like both like wine and classical music are things that people will taste and then be like, no, I don't like this, and then never give a chance. And you need someone to introduce you and sort of point you in the right direction. What kinds do you like? What will you respond to?
Yeah, and we've got a lot of episodes now because that's a weekly show, and it's just something that's easier about staying on schedule with that when you have a co-host.
so
we're pretty good about that. And and I think 70 something episodes out.
Wow.
So, I mean, we've been doing it for a year and a half. So, and we put out a bloopers reel, which is really fun each year, right around New Year's. So those are funny.
Oh,
and,
nice.
It's really fun. It tends to be a little bit longer than my level episodes just because we're covering so much stuff, mm-hmm. you know? And it's a good time. Scores and Pours, wherever you find your podcast. And of course, Level with Emily Reese.
Of course. Yes. Don't forget the classic. Yeah. That's a great spread. You have a lot of cool stuff going on right now.
It's fun. Yeah, there's some fun stuff. Yeah, for sure.
Well, it was an absolute pleasure to hear more about it. You've been on one of our past podcasts before. I honestly don't remember which one at this point, but it's been a long time.
So it's been a long time, and you've been on mine too. So.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember that. I remember specifically using that platform. Like, okay, I'm going to be on Emily's podcast. So what? She has this whole audience, this a certain amount of clout that comes with it. Of course, I'll talk about the Kid Icarus game for the 3DS.
I love it.
Spread the good news.
It's so amazing. A beautiful choice. A beautiful
Thank
choice.
You.
What are you playing right now? What are you up to?
Oh, I just got back into Minecraft.
Oh God. So. I can't ever allow myself to do that again. Oh my God.
I'm even opening the doors to mods. It's gonna be a bad scene. Look, 2020 was Animal Crossing, 2021 is Minecraft.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough. But literally, when I was playing Minecraft on my phone and on my PlayStation, I was like, I have to rip the band. I like erase them both on the same day. I'm like, I can't do this anymore.
Yep. Very understandable choice. Very.
Yeah. And then sometimes I'll be gaming and it'll be a game I have no intention of doing an interview about, or maybe I've already done it and I'll feel all guilty for playing it. And so, yeah, it's good for me to just like to get rid of those demons. Minecraft, I love you. I spent way too much time with you.
Yep. See, that's awesome. The thing for me is, everything about Minecraft is something that I know I would love, but yep. I feel like I just kind of missed the boat. Like by the time it started getting popular, I was, I guess I was in my almost 20 at that point. I don't remember somewhere around there, but I wasn't spending all my time playing games like I was when I was a teenager. Yep. So there's just this whole world, I still barely know how it all works. So I'm looking forward to using that as my relaxation game.
Yes, it is perfect for that. And I just, my dream home that I built out of glass blocks, which I would never have in real life. I would never want a glass block house, but God, I still think about that house I built. Because I'm not a designer by any stretch or an artist in that way. And so that was one of the things that initially intimidated me about Minecraft. I'm like, I don't know what the hell to build. And then you're like, oh, well, you kind of do just figure it out. You figure out what you want and what you need and what you want it to look like. And then you build it.
It's like, a lot like growing up with Legos. That was my jam before video games. It gives you somewhere to start, and it gives you, you know, these blocks that connect in very clear ways.
Yeah. And just how basic you can make it compared to how complicated you can get. Like my business partner Sam Keenan, who mixes our podcast, Sam has a son who's I think 18 now, but when I first met him he was 8. Mm-hmm. And you know, when that kid started playing Minecraft, he was like building castles with elevators and secret passageways and building his own games in it and all kinds of stuff. And I'm just like, yeah, here I am just building my little glass block house.
But you feel so proud. You make four walls and you're like, I'm standing inside a house that I made.
And look, I made stairs or something.
Exactly.
Amazing.
I am such a big supporter of where Minecraft has gone. I am like over the moon that this is what kids are way into. It's such a creative and just wonderful portal into creativity, because just creativity is so important to me. And I know I would have just gone wild for Minecraft if it was out there when I was 8. Oh my gosh, I would have loved it. Makes me, and you know, if you learn the Minecraft language a little bit, you can carry on a conversation with any like 10-year-old you ever meet. So you're kind of good to go. Know about redstone. No worries.
Yep, that's amazing. Yeah, learning all that stuff. Oh my God. Just even the first time I built a mine cart.
Yeah, yeah. I had a friend who taught me how to do that. Yeah.
And oh my God. From like one badass mine all the way back to my home base, I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. Yeah. So cool.
Sadly, I tried to resurrect my old server.
Yeah.
But abandoned for so long they deleted it.
So sad.
My great lava forge and all of the castle I was building, and it's all gone, sadly. But
amazing.
That just, I don't know, that just gives me the fire to begin anew. So if you want to join our Minecraft realm, just send me information. You're welcome.
I just might. I'd have to probably do it on my phone unless you're playing it on the PlayStation, right?
I don't know if it's cross-platform. I'm on PC, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know either.
It's the old version, though, you know, not the new fancy one, so.
Yep. I love it. That's amazing.
Yeah, so next time we have you on in 3 more years, I'll tell you how big my new castle is.
That sounds good.
Take it from there.
Sounds good. I hope it's not 3 years, though.
Yeah, let's see if we can beat that record, huh?
Yeah, let's try that. I'd appreciate that.
I really appreciate you taking the time, Emily. It was an absolute pleasure to talk for a little bit.
Oh, likewise, Stephen. It's nice to reconnect, and I hope we get to do this again soon.